Hour number two of the program here. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you until the top of next hour when the Corky Kell Classic comes your way with Sam Crenshaw and the coach. But the story of the day that we are talking about is Michael Penix Jr. and his ability to continue to show growth and leadership. This time in a little bit of an unconventional way, he was involved in a scuffle, a skirmish. A Donnybrook. How many different ways can I say this? There was a fight at practice today involving QB1, and he was in the center of it. Words were said that shouldn't have been said, and he responded in kind. And the team had his back, and hopefully this is the last we see of that, but it was day two of joint practices, so you have to expect that tempers are going to flare a little bit, and they did. And QB1 was interviewed after today, and he was talking about how great it was to see that his teammates had his back when they needed him most.
It's great, you know, to know that, you know, I got people that's behind me, got my back, and it's going to be there no matter what. Yeah, and a lot of guys came up and checked up on me because they saw I was at the bottom of the pile, and they just make sure I was good. And, you know, I was like, I'm good, like, let's practice. But it's great to know that I got people that got my back.
Yeah, again, we don't ever want to see you at the bottom of another pile. Hopefully not for the rest of the season. Inevitably, it will happen. That's just the nature of football. But hopefully those things are few and far between. Michael Penix Jr. was also talking about the state of his various weapons on offense and all these different guys that we've been talking about. You'll hear from one of them coming up in just a minute, and Chris Blair, that he has to get the rock to.
It's been great. A lot of guys are competing at a high level. Obviously, Drake, he does what he does each and every day. Like he's talked about Casey, you know, stepping up, and he's been great for us all camp. You know, he's been showing a lot of great things, you know, on tape. And, you know, and that's just building that, me and him building that trust together so that whenever game week comes and he is out there on that field, you know we're going to be on the same page. Obviously, Mooney, you know, we'll have him back coming up in the season. I feel like he should be back week one. I'm not sure as far as that. I'm not going to talk too much about that. But he's been doing good with his recovery and stuff like that. So we definitely know we have him as well, and he's going to be a big-time playmaker for us. And Ray and Kyle, they've been consistent this camp. And it's exciting to see. It's exciting to see. Bijan and Tyler, every day, consistent, same person. You know what you're going to get. And it's been great.
Wait a minute. Oren, did Michael Penix Jr. just pull a Kirk and say something that he wasn't supposed to say? He thinks he should be back for week one.
Obviously, Mooney, you know, we'll have him back coming up in the season. I feel like he should be back week one. Sure as far as that. I'm not going to talk too much about that. But
okay. All right, QB1.
He just talked a whole lot about it, though, QB1.
Yeah, you really did. You learned from the best there in doing that by accident, Kirk Cousins. And to finish up here before we hear from Chris Blair, how about Mooney when he gets back? It's going to be just like riding a bike, right?
No, not much worry because we spent off season, you know, working together. We spent the off season working together. We took a QB receiver trip out to Cali this off season. You know, spent some time with each other. You know, try to get that chemistry down. So I know whenever he come back, I know how he run his routes. You know, he knows where I like to put the ball, and we'll be good. I'm not really worried about that because he gonna get open. I just gotta get him the ball, and you know, I feel like I know I'm gonna be able to do that. So.
Yeah, if this was someone like a Casey Washington or a Chris Blair or a David Sills, young guys that might make the team and they start to miss some time, then maybe, you know, because every rep is so valuable. But at the end of the day, Darnell Mooney is a vet. He's a pro. He knows how to run his routes and he knows how to catch the rock from QB number one. All right, what about Chris Blair? Is he going to make this team? He chatted with Dukes and Bell today, and this is what he had to say about it.
All right, so today, last day of this joint practice with the Titans, we're with Chris Blair, and it looked like, man, things got a little chippy out there. I don't know if you were involved in that, but talk about that, because Mike and I were saying this yesterday on the show. The second day, you know, guys maybe trying to get back some energy.
Yeah, I think the intensity was high, and guys were flying around. We got very competitive. I feel like Tuesday we had a very good practice versus them, and I feel like they wanted to come out for some Avengers today, so... they tried to come full force, and we did the same. So, yeah, it got a little rowdy out there, but I think we still ended up having a productive practice.
heard the wide receiver coach saying, CB, you know, got your back. Yeah. Big competition, but big opportunity for you, man. Your third year with the team and with Darnell on the sidelines. How are you feeling about your effort this camp?
I feel like everything is going well. Just taking advantage of all my opportunities that I'm getting. Just trying to make the most of them for real, knowing all my alignments and assignments, and just being in the right spot at the right time and gaining trust with my quarterback. So everything is working out pretty well.
I always say the preseason matters because of the work. And you ended up getting a touchdown in the first preseason game. Talk about that play and getting open and your route running and how that's developed for you.
Absolutely. I think Ike Hilliard and KJ Black and the rest of the guys have done a great job of honing in on our details as far as running routes and getting open and the little things that we need to do to gain that separation. And I got that opportunity to put some things like that on tape, just gain the separation. And that's what happened on the touchdown. I knew I had a chance to make a play up top. And the main thing, I just wanted my quarterback to know I was going to win. So as long as he know that and he was going to give me a chance, I knew I had to come down with the ball.
Number 19, Chris Blair with us, guys, on Dukes and Bell. How's Penix looking, man, now that he has got the leadership role, which he really embraces? The team's got his back, it looks like.
Absolutely, yeah. We're riding with him for sure. He's coming out every day. He's making plays. He's got that swag that you want to see in the quarterback. Every time he makes a big throw or something like that, he just kind of gives us this look. We already know that he's on. He's ready. But, yeah, man, he's balling. He's taking command of the huddle. Everybody trusts him, and he got everybody trust. So that's the main thing. Like, long as the team believes in them, I think we're going to work out well.
You are also possibly and probably playing a lot of special teams. Talk about that as well, because any way you can contribute to make the team is what it's about. Obviously, you want to be a wide receiver, you want to be on offense, but the special teams aspect may play a role in that.
Absolutely, yes, sir, most definitely. Special teams is definitely a key part of the game. And like you said, any way that you can get on the field and help the team out. So I just try to go out there, and I treat special teams just like offense. I'm going to go out there and give it my best effort. I know where to align and assign. And I just want to go out there and let my coaches know that they can trust me at any point. Like, wherever they put me, I'm going to give my best effort and try to make a play.
From a small town in Mississippi through Alcorn State, talk about your journey, man, to the NFL.
It's been quite a journey. It's been quite a journey. I mean, like you said, coming from a small town, having to go to junior college, and from junior college going to Alcorn State, but I wouldn't trade it because it really taught me like the definition of hard work and responsibility, having to take what you get, what you have, and make it work. So Alcorn really kind of taught me that, and now just being here, man, I'm blessed. I don't take nothing for granted. So just being here, it's not a coincidence. I feel like it's a testament to all the hard work, and obviously God put me in this position.
CB, how many balls you catch out of that damn jugs machine, man?
I catch before and after practice. So
how many balls?
I'll say probably by the end of the day, at least like 250.
250 balls?
Yeah, about 250.
What's that jug sound, Mike? Foom. Because I'm always like, man, how many balls do you have to catch? Man, we see you. You got the hands. Man, how many balls? And I'm like, so 250 a day. All right.
Right. You have to, you know, stay on top of your craft, because sometimes, you know, like we get in practice and the ball might not come your way as much. So you still want to stay on top of it, make sure you still can catch the ball and focus on the little details, especially when you're tired at the end of practice. First thing you want to do is go in, get you something to drink and chill. But, you know, just if I can focus while I'm tired, I know when I got energy and everything, I'm good to go. So.
Chris Blair with us, guys, showed up on the stat sheet, had a good game against the Lions. How tough is it, though, knowing, man, you got to make the most out of every opportunity? Or is that just, you don't let that get in your head, you just go with the flow?
I really don't think too much about it. That's my mindset regardless, even if I had a solidified spot on the team or not. It's just more so when I go on the field, I'm treating every snap like it's my last, because I know there's so many people that want to be in my shoes and want to be in this position and don't have the chance to. So I just go out there every time I get on the field, I'm going to give my best and give my all to the team.
Before we let you go, tell the people, tell Falcon fans something about Chris Blair that we do not know. What does CB like to do? What's different about you away from this game?
I don't really do too much, honestly, but I can say this. I can't say this. It's nothing crazy what I like to do, but at the end of the day, I can't say I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus.
Okay.
And just what he's been in my life and getting me to this point, I can't do nothing but give him thanks for that. So that's who I am, man.
There's nothing wrong with that, brother. You got to have some faith, no doubt about it. Chris Blair, thank you, brother.
Yes, sir, thank you. Appreciate you.
That is Chris Blair, again, one of the guys that is trying to make the team this year, and hopefully if he continues to show out in the preseason, he'll give himself a good opportunity to do just that. It's something that there's a space for it. There's a need for it. He's a big body. He's a guy that has shown the ability to make good catches on balls. And Michael Penix Jr. laid one perfectly in the breadbasket in the first preseason game. And hopefully we'll see more of that. I'm not entirely sure between him and Casey Washington and David Sills and Drummond. There's a bunch of guys that are competing for just one or two at the most spots. So it's going to be tough, and it's going to be a tough competition going on at the wide receiver position. speaking of tough competitions, how about them Braves last night, Oren? 13-5. It started out well. They came back. And then Spencer Strider, as we talked about, just absolutely imploded.
The Yankees. The Mets ran out of pyrotechnics and fireworks last night because they hit so many home runs.
Yeah.
And they couldn't fire off anymore.
And to top it all off, Pete Alonso ties and then breaks the record for most home runs hit by a Met, passing Daryl Strawberry. You know what's interesting about that? And I'm talking about baseball because we're going to have our buddy Rob Bradford on next. What does he think the Braves should do this offseason in terms of restructuring this team? Were you surprised to hear that the team home run record for the Mets was 253?
Very.
That seems low.
Just goes to show that, like, I don't know, they just can't keep guys there for an extended period of time. But I would thought maybe David Wright, maybe, just because – I think,
but his career was cut short.
He was cut short, like the longest tenured one, but
Piazza,
but you know,
Eric Carter,
kind of in between Piazza, between those that Dodgers run and then the Marlins run afterwards.
Because Keith Hernandez wasn't like a prolific home run hitter.
No, Keith had a good. He was a good average, good contact guy, but he wasn't. It's odd. Because you just thought that guys, I guess that's what the Mets sort of have been the last 30-some-odd years. It's just stop gaps for players, not full-time, like 10, 15-year career guys there.
No, and the ones that are, again, just weren't. I mean, you're talking about guys that were good players of their time, but like Carlos Beltran, Carlos Delgado, guys that they brought in, Jose Reyes, those guys weren't hitting, you know, in the amount of time that they were with that organization, 300, 400 home runs. They weren't at that point in their career. Interesting stuff. All right, when we get back, we'll talk to Rob Bradford, Odyssey MLB insider, about what is going down with the Braves. What should they do this offseason to make sure this does not happen again next year? We'll do that next. Chris Thomas tonight, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Back with you here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle, be with you until the start of the second game of the Corky Kell Classic. Currently in a weather delay in the first game, so we will be rocking and rolling until then. So now you'll have me for an undetermined amount of time. So that means you must continue to listen to Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Not that you wouldn't be tuning in to the Corky Kell Classic anyway, but now you'll probably just get some more of me before that, so lucky you. 404-726-0929. The question is, how did we get here, and what the heck do we do next year to get out of it to make sure that this doesn't happen again? Odyssey MLB Insider, host of Baseball Isn't Boring, Rob Bradford, my friend, my colleague, my amigo. Let's go back before we go forward, shall we? We had the great debate before the trade deadline. Should they, shouldn't they? Who's even really available to move? Were you surprised at the lack of movement one way or the other from the Braves at the trade deadline?
Well, a little bit. And then, first of all, it's great being with you. And I'm making up new T-shirts that say the Braves aren't boring, because I don't feel like they – people might think they are boring. But after sort of digging into their situation, this team is anything but boring. This is maybe the most complicated existence that is around in Major League Baseball in a lot of ways. So to answer your question, I mean, that sort of speaks to what I'm talking about, which is there's not a lot of teams that just sit there and don't do anything, especially when you have obvious free agents, you have maybe obvious guys you can trade, or maybe it's just obvious places that you want to add. I think obviously what complicated it was Ozuna's no-trade clause. That was a problem. But maybe, I just think that this won their time to get creative. And I know that everyone wants the trade deadline to be the be-all, end-all. But really, a lot, what we see at the trade deadline is a lot of teams saying, yeah, sure, if you want to blow me away for something, fine. But if not, I'm going to wait till the off season, and I'm going to deal with a lot more teams than I'm dealing with now with a lot more reasonable prices. So I think that's sort of where they landed. But to answer your question, anytime any team doesn't really do much of anything, I'm a little surprised. But as you dig into it, I'm like, okay, this is more of an off-season thing, I think.
All right, so when it comes to the off-season, because this season's obviously going nowhere fast, what should be, in your opinion, the top priority for Alex Anthopoulos to look towards in terms of reshaping the team?
Oh, I mean, I think you have to get a starting pitcher, right? You have to get a reliable starting pitcher. And as much as you will, I would like to say, hey, I know one. I know one who's from Georgia, Dylan Cease. He's pretty good. Go watch him the last time he was out there. He's clocking in close to 100 with a slider he's writing poems about. I mean, this guy's legit. But at the same time, you know, you have an organization that hasn't really shown, other than signing extensions, that you're going to play in that part of the pool. So I think that the number one priority, however you do it, you have to find an answer there. And maybe it doesn't need to be a be-all, end-all, all-star type starter, but it does have to be someone reliable. It does, and you know, I know that everyone immediately defaults to like the Charlie Morton type, but the Charlie Morton type, not this Charlie Morton type, but the previous Charlie Morton type, a guy that you feel confident that he's going to give you innings, that he's going to give you results while you figure everything out, because you have some potential, obviously. But you also, with that potential, is so much uncertainty with Sale, with Strider, obviously with young guys. So I just think that you need some semblance of a starting pitcher that you feel good about, that he's going to give you a good outing every time he goes through the rotation. That has to be number one. Number two, I would say closers. But you know what? The closers who are on the market, the free agents, very volatile deal, man. Good luck with that.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, the guys that we have now certainly cannot be counted upon to do it again next year. But what about Ozzie Albies? How concerned are you that he might not be able to bounce back from a couple of off seasons now?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm obviously concerned, but I think that's not really at the top of the list of problems. You know, I think that really, you just sort of, to me, you sort of maybe ride it out. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm taking the wrong approach. But I just look at it, if we're talking about the big picture, about what is going to get the Braves back into the place where I'm actually going to feel good about picking them as a playoff contender every single time I come on, you know, it's going to be more than Ozzie Albies. It's going to be, like you said, it's going to be that starting pitching everyone was crowing about not too long ago. It's going to be all these guys who we were saying, oh, my goodness, Alex Anthopoulos, good for you for getting these guys to extension. I mean, I think I've said this before to you, I think. You know, I think the biggest thing is just to get these guys to play up to the back of their baseball cards. And I know that sometimes that's easier said than done, but there's enough signs here, I think, that suggest that they can do that. And it wasn't too long where they were doing that. And maybe Albies falls under that. But really, to me, like, that's not the top of the power rankings of concerns for me right now.
At this point, no shot Snicker comes back, right?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. And maybe that's another thing, right? Like, I think he's a really good manager. And obviously, you know, you have guys who, you know, you have evidence of him being a good manager. But when it comes to managing in baseball, sometimes it's you have good managers where maybe it's not the right guy at the right time. And I'm not in that clubhouse on an everyday basis, so I can't say, hey, listen, he's taking a turn, or maybe things have gone the other way with him. But all I know is that, you know, it's a results business. And sometimes if you find the right guy, even a lesser manager, to be perfectly honest with you, the right guy at the right time with the right group, you can take off. So, I mean, you talk about how they are going to get back on track. Well, you do have to make changes. You do have to make adjustments. And I've seen plenty of teams who have made slight adjustments like that that have taken talented teams and turned the corner.
Talking all things MLB with our Odyssey MLB Insider. Make sure you check out the pod. Baseball Isn't Boring. It's Rob Bradford with Chris Thomas here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, some questions outside of Atlanta here. You buying these Brewers or what?
Oh, I mean, I'm buying them for the regular season. I mean, I love what they're doing, and I love the fact – I love Pat Murphy. You know, I was talking to Brian Anderson for the podcast yesterday about, you know, Pat Murphy and what he's been able to do. And you know, we talked about Snicker and how he has been doing and that relationship with the Braves and whether or not that's the right fit. Pat Murphy is the right fit for this team. And it is interesting to me when I see the teams that are usually in the final four in the last few years, you have managers who are experienced managers who understand what is important, what to prioritize, when to delegate, when to actually use the analytics, when not to use the analytics. And I think Pat Murphy falls under all that entire umbrella. So I think that's a big, big part of it because, you know, the first time I heard Pat Murphy's name, honestly, it was Dustin Pedroia telling stories about him in Arizona State. I'm thinking, man, this guy's a lunatic. Like, he's going to be a major league manager. But I think that he's been in pro ball long enough where he's evolved, and it's just the right place at the right time with the right group. And here's the thing that you got to – we talk about the trade deadline. It is pretty amazing when you get to the trade deadline, even before this run, you get to the trade deadline and you're the Milwaukee Brewers, and you say, well, what do the Milwaukee Brewers need? They don't need much. Now, that was before the deadline. And now they've taken off. They've constructed a really good team, but once again – you know, the playoffs are a different beast. And if you're going to ask me who I'm favorite in the postseason, I would take the Phillies over them. I'd probably take the Padres over them. And I never count out the Dodgers. So, yeah, I mean, I would say the people, the Brewers, Milwaukee, enjoy it while you can.
Speaking of the Dodgers, make it make sense. What's going on with Ohtani?
Oh, I mean, what, with a real estate venture?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, well, you know, this is the unfortunate thing because you have, you know, obviously you had the interpreter thing come up before, and majorly, you know, they make a very strong point that he had nothing to do with it. Then you have this situation, and you know, with his agent involved, and he's like, oh, he has nothing to do with it. I mean, I couldn't tell you if he is in the wrong with any of this stuff. All I know is that what it does is that when this kind of stuff keeps cropping up, then the problem is that every single time it happens, everyone's going to look at baseball and say, understand that this guy, they're going to do everything in their power to make sure this guy is still the face of baseball. They can have Emmanuel Class A busted for gambling. They can have some of these other guys take a turn. What they can't have is the face of baseball taking a turn for the worse when it comes to public perception. So I think that's, you know, we're going to have to ride that out a little bit, but it's just unfortunate because every time something like it, now, you know, it's multiple times now, we have to surface that exact conversation, which I just mentioned.
Which one of the New York teams figures it out? Do you think both will, either, neither, both? Where are you at with this?
That's a great question. I'm going to ask you a baseball question right after this because it came up to me the other day, which has nothing to do with that, but I just like the good baseball questions and debates. But when it comes to the Mets and the Yankees, you know, the Yankees, you know, I find it interesting that Aaron Boone keeps saying, it's just a shame because this is the most talented team that I had. And I think that, like, as much as we're crapping on the Yankees right now, and we're saying, look at that, bullpen's employing Devin Williams, having a terrible year. They're not going to figure it out. I've seen so many instances in early August, late July, where all of a sudden a team gets hot and the conversation changes. So I'm not going to put it past him. I mean, they have Max Fried. Max, I know that he's taking a turn, but still, there's Max Fried. They have Rodon. They have guys. So I would actually probably take them, and I know that this probably isn't the popular opinion, but I don't buy what the Mets are selling with their starting pitching. I know they tried to backload the bullpen with all those arms, but I don't buy what they're selling when it comes to the starters. I mean, you can have all the relievers you want. The Padres have a ton of relievers. They're awesome. But you know what they also have? They also have pretty decent starters. So I'm just a little bit wary because of that with the Mets. And so now I'm going to ask you this. This is just, it has nothing to do with this, but I know you like talking baseball. This came up. We were looking at the 2020 draft. Who, if you had to redraft 2020 draft, Pete Crow Armstrong, Garrett Crochet, who are you taking number one?
Ooh, I think at this point, Rob, you got to go with the everyday player over the pitcher, especially with how often starting pitchers not only break down, Rob, but can't throw more than five innings.
It's a good one, though, right? It's like, because I was just looking at that draft. I'm like, oh, what, you know, this draft, a COVID draft. It wasn't that great because we were just looking at the kid from Philadelphia who was just traded in the Duran trade. I'm like, oh, not a great draft. And I saw those two names. I'm like, oh, that's a pretty good one. But anyway, sorry. That was just a quick aside. My apologies.
No, I like it because it really makes you examine what's more valued. Because I think if you go back 15, 20 years ago, right, Rob, you'd probably say the dominant starting pitcher, the anchor, the ace to your rotation, which in today's age of modern baseball, it's shrinking in terms of what that actually means and the importance of it. There's so few guys that you can name on maybe one hand at this point that are true throwback, 7-8 innings, 115, 120 pitches a start, and post a sub-3 ERA. Those guys just hardly exist anymore.
Yeah, and the problem is, too, is that because of the way that these guys are raised, I mean, and this is this generation of pitchers. I'm talking about, you know, mid to late 20s. The way that these guys have all been raised in the same way now, which is max effort, power, 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 and then ultimately you're going to probably break down. And like Strider, obviously, you know, this was a guy 2 years ago when you had this conversation, you say, oh, no, I'm not trading him for the world. No way. But this was, unfortunately for him, it happened. And unfortunately for a lot of pitchers, almost every pitcher, this is around the corner. I mean, Paul Skenes is awesome. It's great. But is anyone going to be shocked 3 years from now if we're sitting here? Because that's just the way it is. So I think what I'm saying is that I kind of agree with you. Because as good as these guys have been and are, you know that you're going to have to take your lumps somewhere along the road. And with a really good position player like Pete Crow Armstrong, I don't think you're going to ever have to take your lumps.
No, unless a freak injury, unless something like, unfortunately, what happens here in Atlanta with Acuna, where he's now got two bad knees. But the likelihood of something like that happening is very slim. And the guy that I would say is this generation's horse, even Rob, Garrett Cole, he's been out for the year.
Right. And think about this is that, you know, I mentioned Strider, but you can talk about Cole. You can talk about all these guys. A couple of years ago, when they're rolling, we're just saying, no, you know, it's not going to happen to them. They're just going to keep on doing what they're doing. But I do think that teams internally, when they sign these deals, when Max Fried signs a deal, when Garrett Crochet signs a deal, internally, they almost have to build in somewhere along the way, they're going to have this bump in the road. They're going to have this year, lost year. And you hope it doesn't happen. I really hope it doesn't happen. I hope they figure this out. I hope that they find a way to manage this stuff, which is the conversation going back all the way back to last year. But until they do, I'm sorry. Like, this is just how it's happening. It keeps happening.
Well, and here's the thing before I let you go. The reason Max Fried is in New York and no longer here in Atlanta is because the Yankees gave him an 8-year contract, Rob. The
right.
Braves were never going to do that because of exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, the Yankees know the risk that they're inheriting, but they also know it's the cost of doing business. And, you know, that's the unfortunate thing. And that's why that's why I think you're seeing a lot of these pitchers, especially college pitchers, being drafted more and more and more. because this is their solution to it. This is their avenue to it. We're going to get these guys up to the majors quick. They're going to, like, fill in the gap. They're going to be controllable guys, so that because we know that it's going to get really uncomfortable for the high-end guys who are going to ask for a lot of money and then probably get hurt somewhere along the way. So, and that's what, you know, and that's, you know, coming back to the Braves, that's the challenge, right? I mean, and that's why I say when you're going out and getting a guy, you know, everybody wants the Dylan Cease, right? Everyone wants, but the cost of doing business for those guys is, as Fried pointed out, I mean, that's, it's so crazy. So maybe it's just better to do something along the lines of what you did with Sale, to do something along the lines of what you did with Morin, and then figure it out from there. So, yeah, no easy solutions, but that's why we talk about it.
The funniest part about that, Rob, is to bring this all full circle here, the Braves tried to do that with A.J. Smith-Shawver, and he is now out for the year. So even when they tried to go that route of bringing up the young stud, he was pitching great, and now he needs Tommy John surgery. So
I know.
Of course,
I mean, isn't – you know, and that's – and not as a quick – you know, as a quick note to that, and this is probably a bigger conversation, but – it really is a generation. I'm feeling it's a generational thing where, you know, these kids that you're talking about, you know, whether it's 23 through 25 through 28, they are being trained a different way than the 35 to 40 year olds were. That's just a fact. And we don't have proof. It's like cell phones. Well, we don't know the impact cell phones have. I don't know. But I do know this is that evidence is showing that that generation of pitchers are usually ending up pretty familiar, going down some familiar paths.
Yeah, it's really crazy. This is a good conversation, Rob. Appreciate you as always. We'll check out Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll chat soon.
All right, always good talking with you. I'll talk to you later.
All right, that is Rob Bradford, Odyssey MLB Insider. When we get back to close out the 7 o'clock hour, we'll let you hear from Mike Hughes. He was on with the morning shift. What did CB2 have to say about joint practices and a whole lot more? Don't go anywhere. It's Chris Thomas Tonight. Really interesting stuff there with our buddy Rob Bradford. He's right. Pitchers are trained as specialists these days, and that's why we see so many more arm injuries. You're designated as a pitcher a lot earlier in your baseball life than you were back in the day. And the concentration on a singular sport also happens much more frequently than it did 20, 30 years ago. Even 15 years ago. Warren, I don't know about you. I played everything growing up. I at least tried everything. I wasn't good at much, but I at least tried everything. I tried soccer, basketball, baseball, football. I did shot put and track and field. So at least I got out there and I tried everything. Now it feels like kids are one sport athletes in like middle school, which is crazy. And that's why you get hurt.
I saw one of the little YouTube shorts today. They talked about there was a kid whose parents, he's 11 years old, and they got him Tommy John surgery. And I'm like, what?
Whoa. Whoa.
He had Tommy John surgery, and he was 11 years old. The worst thing I worried about health-wise at 11 years old was
chickenpox.
Yeah, an upset stomach or skinning my knee, like falling or something. I wasn't worried about Tommy John.
I feel like you're not even developed enough at 11 years old to have Tommy John. Like, you still got your child bones in there, man.
How does that happen? What are you doing with that child that at 11 years old, the UCL needs surgical work?
And that's the thing. Like, you would take a break from throwing a baseball because it would then turn to football season. You would take a break from ramming into each other because then it would be basketball season. You'd take a break from shooting over and over and over again because baseball season was starting back up again. That's how it used to be. But now, again, these quarterbacks are quarterbacks from the time they're 10 years old. And all they do is throw a football 1,000 times, and you wonder why their shoulders break down. These pitchers are pitchers from 11, 12 years old. It's just crazy. All right, we'll switch gears here. Mike Hughes joined the radio station. He joined the morning shift, and he talked about what's going on. Our CB2 exclusively right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. He joined the morning shift with Squid and Allie and Mike Johnson, and this was their conversation.
Cornerback Mike Hughes to the show. We're going to get into really, really deep about this practice. Obviously, a cool crossover, but just the Falcons as a whole, man. You obviously have been around a couple of different places, seem to have found a home here. What's the relationship like between you and not only Raheem, but a lot of the coaches and other guys like AJ?
The relationship's great, man. I'm a people's guy, I would like to say. So I'm big on, creating great relationships. And that's what this game allows us to do. We got people from all walks of life just coming together for one common goal. And it's always special to, be around the guys and being able to just, do whatever or talk about whatever, whether it's football or just about life. And those are the type of relationships that you can create for a lifetime outside of just the football building. But I would like to say my relationship with everybody is great, man. I think everybody likes me. That's what they say. But, I like everybody else. So it's been great.
I'm like, you're a guy that's played inside and outside. And there's real differences. And some people think one's harder than the other. Walk us through the differences and which one you think is actually harder to play.
Probably nickel. It's really a glorified linebacker. They got to do a lot more communicating than a corner does. Corners we get feedback from the other positions on adjustments that we might need to do sometimes. But for the most part, we're out there on the island. So it's probably more physically demanding, difficult in that aspect. But as far as like communication and assignment, nickel is probably way harder.
And when you say you're out there on an island, how hard is it at times if you feel like you maybe be a step behind to trust your technique and not kind of panic out there?
It's just all about, like, you really trusting your technique. Just not trying anything new, doing what you practice, and trying to perfect that. And just having the mindset of just bringing it every play. You can't fall asleep out there, because as soon as you do, the ball's in the air, and if you're not ready, then everybody knows how that goes at corner. So just not being able to fall asleep, trusting your technique, and just being confident.
Cornerback Mike Hughes joining us here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. To follow up on that, talk to us a little bit about the relationship with yourself and a guy like Billy Bowman. Obviously, he's been brought in, I think, like you're talking about, glorified linebacker. He's been asked to do some of that box stuff. He looks built for it. I mean, he looks like he's enjoying himself out here. He's having a good camp so far. But obviously, you're a guy that playing, a number of spots. You can shed some light on that for him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I can speak for all the rookies. They've come in with the mindset of just work. And that's all you can ask for. And they've taken bits and pieces of what we've given them and just trying to add it to being a pro, and just trying to teach them how to be a pro. And they've done a great job so far. And like I said, all you can ask for them is to come out here and work and just perfect their craft. And everything else will fall into place. Like, I always tell them, like, you got drafted for a reason. It's hard to make it to the league, so being able to stay and find your footing is also another thing too. So just trying to help them in that aspect, just being a pro, and like I said, just bringing it every day, making sure you're doing anything to help the team.
We are joined by Mike Hughes on the Morning Shift. I like to ask the fun questions. So I know we're in the thick of training camp right now. We just had our first crossover practice, but what did you do in the off season?
So I closed on a house in LA. I've been working on that for a while. That's why I usually go and train in the off season. So closed on a house, I was dealing with that pretty much the majority of the off season. But just being around family, I'm a family guy. And just kind of, having fun, really. Whether it's bowling or jet skiing, I like the jet ski. I know it's dangerous, but I'm pretty good at it, so shouldn't be no worries. But having fun and really just spending time with family.
And who are you rooming with out here?
With D. Alford, AJ, and Clark Phillips.
Who's controlling the music right now?
In the dorm room?
Yeah.
Honestly, whenever we're in there to sleep. So whenever I go into everybody's rooms, it's closed. Everybody's just kind of in their own world. We see each other all day here. So once we get over there, it's pretty much sleep time. So that's how that goes.
Joined by Mike Hughes on the Morning Shift. I want to get back to the jet ski. What kind of jet ski you got?
What's the name of it? Do you know any brands?
I just know that, the Kawasaki, I think Kawasaki makes one. Was it Sea-Doo makes one?
Sea-Doo. I got two Sea-Doos.
Wow. Yep.
Two Sea-Doo, the trick bike ones.
You like getting out there early in the morning or late at night when it's glass out there, right?
You talking about like when it's calm?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the best. When it's pretty rough, that's when you got to be real careful. But like you said, when it's glass, that's when you can kind of have fun with it. So.
All right, I'll go back to football real quick. How hard is it in today's game with the CBA where you guys don't practice tackling a lot? How hard is it to stay crisp on that tackling? Because you said earlier on island, and a lot of times you are, and if the guy gets the ball, you got to make the play.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So we got this thing called thud, and pretty much you do the same thing as if you're about to tackle somebody, you just don't bring them down. So as much as we can, we try to emphasize that. And I mean, it's really no other way to really get prepared for it. I guess the pro thud that we usually use is kind of how we get ourselves ramped up to do the real thing. But other than tackling for real, it's like, you know what I mean? Yeah. You can't. Right. You got to get in the game and then see how you do. So
finishing up here with cornerback Mike Hughes. Look, I can't let you go without at least asking you about today's practice and some of the matchups you had out here against the Tennessee Titans. Anybody stick out? I know that we joke around Falcons legend Calvin Ridley over there, but anybody stick out? What was one of your favorite matchups today, and how do you feel like the defense did?
Obviously, really sticks out. I was ready to go against Cam Ward, see what he has. And I think he'll have a long, good career just based off of what I've seen and his confidence level. He's out there talking a little bit. So, I enjoyed that. And, they got a bunch of young guys over there that I'm not really too familiar with, but they got, some skill set that you got to pay attention to when you're out there. So, it was some pretty fun matchups, though. Obviously, like I said, Calvin Ridley and Cam Ward were definitely at the top of my list.
All right, that's cornerback Mike Hughes joining us here on the morning shift. Thanks so much, man. Good luck this year.
Good stuff there from CB2. When we get back, we're going to let you hear from Miles Garrett, who joined me a little bit earlier in the show. He was boots on the ground today. Fight day at training.